So it's the, well, when we're recording this, it's the Sunday after the
E Pluribus Unum rally, or the Decision America Tour.
The Decision America Tour. Yeah, it's the rally we were talking about at the end of last month has already happened, and I certainly had a lot of fun. How about you, Becky?
I definitely did. Man, it was really fun being there as a constituent for E Pluribus Unum, for We the People, for secular government, promoting secular values in voting in the face of 5,000 religious people that bust in on their buses and vans from all parts across the West, including California.
It was a bit of a jazz for me because, seeing all those people and seeing all the patently ridiculous stuff they were saying. There's a lot of I-15-15 stuff.
Oh, help protect women and children in bathrooms.
Yeah, I-15-15 is the Washingtonian approach to the war on taking a dump. I've decided I'm going to say that every time. Maybe we should get into some details, though. Welcome to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey, and that's me. I am Sam Mulvey. Our phone number, our voicemail number is 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Joining us today, as usual, is lovely Becky.
Hi, Sam.
Hi. And in the studio for the first time, but by no means a newcomer to the show, is David Williamson. How are you doing today?
Great. It's wonderful to be here. I've been a fanboy of the show for many years, and a participant only a few times, so it's wonderful to come and meet you both.
Oh, gee, don't say fanboy.
I knew that would get you.
Yeah, I'm kind of allergic to fans. And not in the way most people say they are.
But so that rally, it really was rally, something.
Yeah, everybody showed up. The usual tone deaf version of the worst America song ever. God bless America. You know, the standard. Actually, the guy playing the guitar was pretty good, but he was clearly a banjo player playing the guitar. I thought maybe they think a banjo player would just be too obvious for a rally like this one.
Well, we had our own guitar player. We had a guitar player of our own. Shelley Siegel made it out to
surprise
serenade the crowd with some of her awesome secular tunes. And in the build up to the actual event and speakers, she was doing some pretty nice covers. And it was really nice to have her up here in the Pacific Northwest after her recent relocation to L.A.
Yeah, that actually kind of surprised me. Oh, you're in L.A. now? Yes. Wow, surprise. I just want to say, for the record, that I have mad respect for the banjo and banjo players. They just have a bad reputation when paired with Christian weirdness. Can I just put it that way?
You can put it that way, Sam. I think that we'll forgive you and understand.
Okay, fantastic.
Did you guys get some good media? Hopefully the fact that the Graham was on the other side of the steps brought some attention, maybe?
I don't know.
I do know. We actually have E Pluribus Unum, original motto project, has uploaded the audio and video from the rally from all the different speakers. Sam was our opener. I was sort of our mid-game relief. And it was actually really fun. I think one of the most inspiring things was to have a young activist speaking. That was Carrie Ray, who is a high schooler, who was speaking about her generation's desire and need for secularism.
That's awesome.
So I think in our show notes, we can put some links to that.
Absolutely. The videos are generally very good. I mean, I'll be honest, I only spoke for about 2 minutes. And after I realized the lay of the land and that we were going to have music and stuff like that, and I was going to be first, I realized that my job was not really to say anything meaningful. I mean, when is that ever my job, really? But to get the crowd moving. And when I talk like that, when I do that, I'm actually not even certain what I say. I just link up my brain to my mouth or parts of my brain to my mouth and just sort of, you know, okay, Wernicke's area, go nuts. And then just sort of disconnect from the whole thing. Because otherwise, speaking in front of a microphone is fairly easy. Speaking in front of a crowd, even, I mean, any crowd, actually takes a little bit more chutzpah, I should say, or chutzpah, or however you pronounce
that. That would be chutzpah, yes.
Yeah, okay, I'm from the Midwest. CH means one thing and one thing only. And I got a little bit of the fear. And the fear is the public speaking, sort of, you can feel your endocrine system saying, hey, look, I've got all this crap stored. Let's use it now. And I'm like, oh, man, I'm not really doing very well. And then it gets really silent across the street, because we were literally across the street from the Franklin Graham rally. And I go, ooh, they're having a moment of, no, it's not a moment of silence. This is a Christian rally. They're praying. I'm like, they can hear me. And then suddenly, I was fine. And I'm like, I'm completely rocking it.
We did have some interesting passersby. We had some drive-by Jesusing.
A lot of drive-by Jesusing. I think it was at least
hallelujah.
Four.
God bless you.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, as far as being interrupty jerks about everything, that's about as polite as you can be.
Only one of us got a heckler, and of course it was our teenage young woman who was speaking.
Right.
Because that's the easiest target to heckle. I mean, man, she held her own, though.
She did. Powered right through it. And I think that may have been, and at least for me, sort of the moral high point of the rally was, yeah, they have buses and bus people in from four states, confirmed, by the way. And, you know, it's just, and I won't lie, it was not a large group of people, but a significant group. And, you have a kid talking in this old Yutz decides that it's his time to come across the street and tell us how tell this girl how terrible she is for believing differently from him. And, well, if that's not proof that we're making progress on some level, I think, I don't know what would be.
Well, she had the microphone. She was the one that had it, and he didn't, and he tried to take it away and apparently wasn't able.
And lost.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, at events like that, I think there's a lot of benefits, and hopefully you attracted some new people to the movement, whether they were just walking by or heard about it in advance. Have some of that happened?
I think it was fun as we were walking through downtown Olympia, because we had to park a little far away. We had our posters and our signs and our things like, pro-LGBTQ, pro-secular, free thinker here, I'm secular and I vote. And there were lots of petition takers, petition signature gatherers there, not just for I-1515, which we declined to sign, but for other things. And, started asking us about it. And, oh, who are you? Oh, we advocate for a secular government. He says everyone has to be an atheist. I said, well, we are, but no, not everyone who advocates for a secular government is an atheist. We ran into, just people working in downtown Olympia in the government office buildings that were out on their lunch break taking a walk and saying, oh, who are you? Are you the God people? Oh, no, we're the counter protesters advocating for a secular government. She goes, oh, that's wonderful. I'm not an atheist. I'm agnostic, but I support you. And I said, I think you and I are on the same page.
That's awesome.
So it was really fun.
And then Satanists.
Yes. Now, that was one of the high points for me.
Oh, yeah.
I think, Sam, you just referenced during your speaking time, there happened to be a silent prayer going on. During the off-tune God Bless America, we had that in the background as our Satanists parade out with their striking black and white American flags, their full regalia. It was amazing. It was awesome. And to hear in the background the off-key 5,000 God Bless America with the in your face Ave Satanus was quite the image.
Yeah, Negative Land couldn't have done it better as far as I'm concerned. That was that the juxtaposition of the two was fantastic, I thought.
And purely serendipitous.
Although at the rally, I think I got a phrase I have been known to use about Satanists once or twice said to me regarding what they were.
Oh, yes?
Yeah.
Would that be your dinner theater atheists?
Yeah, I don't know that I want that. I don't know that I want that to be the phrase that I'm known for. I'll be honest with you, because I coined that phrase before the modern incarnation of the Satanic Temple got off the ground and was the rhetorical juggernaut that it is today. And it seemed a lot weaker when I coined that, but I guess I still think it's appropriate, but I think it's all it being an entirely negative, or not, actually, it wasn't even an entirely negative thing even then, but I think the positivity of it and sort of the fact that the whole point of the exercise is we believe in these things and we believe in gestures just as strongly as you do. And if you're going to have your gestures, we're going to have ours. And maybe that's not what you want. So why don't we just keep our gestures to ourselves?
Now, is that gestures or jesters? Because I can see a lot of clowns there. That is my rhetorical
yeah.
dismissal.
Yeah, man, every time I try to say something, everybody just, I try to be nuanced about it, and everybody just reads it as a dismissal, which means at this point there are probably a lot of Satanists who don't like me, which is pretty darn metal, so I'm okay with it. That's about as metal as you can be, and not be Lemmy from Motorhead.
I think the point here, though, is that to say dinner theater atheist, it's not a way to dismiss. Not in our current times.
Well, it may have been at the time, but were I to redo it, I would say it's not a dismissal. I like what they do.
Yeah. No, I think it may seem apt, I think, to those of us who are on the outside of that. Mm-hmm. But I think on the receiving end of that, it seems derogatory. And I can understand. I mean, this happens in all types of conversations. And yeah. We label ourselves with different things, and we have baggage that we bring and baggage that we presume others bring. And I think when I post about the Satanic Temple's activism in Florida, in the Southwest, in the Northwest, people are talking about, well, they're believers too. Why should we care about what they think? And I try to always couch that in terms of, you need to go and read their the tenets of their version of Satanism, and you can disregard all of the symbology, if you want, of any religion, and talk about what it actually means, and that's when you get to the goods, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and what they're saying about the stuff that the principles behind what they're doing, I think stand up fairly well. And I think pass any sort of test I would put on them for morality, which is well, it's just hilarious.
Well, if they're going to be dinner theater atheists, and I don't necessarily think that they are, but they're dinner theater humanists.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's probably is appropriate too.
But if you want to talk, you know, grand gest, because they're what they do actually means something, and I think is actually helping bring the dialogue in America further, unlike the weirdness coming from across the street and from Franklin Graham, who was going, we need more Christians getting the Bible in the educational system. I was incensed.
I said, I'm sitting there making my little pro-secular signs, and oh man, did my ears start burning when they started, you know, proclaiming how imagine every school board across America stacked with Christians. No, I'd rather not imagine it, sir. Every school
but
board
we've seen it, we've talked about it frequently.
Yeah, my ears were burning on that one, and he said, "Calm down. This is just their rhetoric. This is what we are here for."
Yeah, this is what they do, and
shouldn't be a surprise.
That's why we're here. I mean, let it fire you, but don't let it drive you away from the mission.
No, and I think one of the things also that we encountered while we were in Olympia, in our state's capital, was we spent the rest of the afternoon down there. We walked around downtown, we stopped at a pub, we had some lunch, and all of those other people, they had their 5,000-person rally, which some people are reporting as the largest gathering in recent times, you know, in Olympia. They just got right back on their buses and vans and headed back out. Didn't even bring, you know, business or help the economy of the town or anything like that. And that was an interesting little interaction we had with some of the local proprietors of stores and restaurants in Olympia.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of speakers. You had Bob Seidensticker. You had Travis Simmons. You had who am I missing?
You had Jennifer Goulet,
who
is running for a state-level representative, first out open atheist and feminist doing so, and looking forward to having her on the show at some point.
Yeah, but have we not had her on the show already?
I don't believe that we have yet.
I think we have. Not. I know definitely not since her bid for the state house. So that's an important election to pay attention to if she's running for
State level representative in the Tri-Cities area.
Yeah. I was trying to come up with the actual number, but if that affects you, definitely go that route. Or definitely pay attention, I suppose I should say.
Well, her opponent is Mary Dye, who we've discussed on this show before. She was a representative that in Olympia during Planned Parenthood Lobbying Day approached a group of teenagers who were advocating for teen clinics and things like that.
Oh, yeah, and she just up and asked them if they were virgins.
Yes.
Just on the Capitol floor, because that's what you do with kids who are trying to be involved in the political process who you disagree with.
Yes, you inquire minor children about their sexual history.
Yeah, well, that seems to be like a new popular sport with state-level representatives. Is being jerks to children on the legislative floor, totally cutting off any chance of them having a meaningful interface with government ever, because then, well, you know, if they don't agree with you, then they'll never agree with you, so there's you don't want them to vote.
Do you get that kind of stuff in Florida, David?
I don't. I've been paying attention to the state legislature for a couple of years now, but I don't see as much of their local activity as I do at the state house. And I've enjoyed keeping up with that, and we have as an organization. But I see pandering happening, but I certainly see you guys highlight it in a very different fashion. And I guess maybe if I pay closer attention, I might see much more of it down there.
It tends to stand out a lot when it happens. So maybe it isn't actually happening. But I did want to end with saying that, Becky, your speech was amazing.
Oh, well, thank you, Sam.
Yeah, I think you really...
I did have the only bilingual speech.
You had a bilingual speech, but you also brought stories and actual information, totally juxtaposed with the fear going across the street. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. When we come back from the break, we're going to move away from Washington and go inside the obtuse triangle, or at least one end of it, and discuss what's going on in Florida with our friend here.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Allegedly, soccer is a beautiful game.
It is when you know what's going on.
That's the problem. MLS is 20 years old, and people are still shocked to hear that there's an American Soccer League.
That's why you and I are talking about it. This is a discussion of American soccer for nerds and beginners. It's a good first step if a crippling soccer addiction is something that's missing from your life.
Join the club. Celebrate the 20th anniversary of MLS by actually following the season.
Hands-free football. New episodes every week at handsfreefootball.com.
I want to bring it back, but it's more than basic.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Joining us now is David Williamson. He's an activist and community organizer in the Orlando, Florida area, where he's a founding member and current chair of the Central Florida Freethought Community, or CFFC. So we introduced you in the last segment, but I think at this point we should say what you actually do. How you doing today?
Great, great. It's wonderful to be here, like I said before, and I'm hopeful that we can talk a little bit about things that are going on in our organization, but I'm also excited to hear about all the things in Washington, because you guys have state and local organizations here, and I feel like we're on the same, inventing the same wheels, so to speak sometimes.
Running our carts on similar wheels.
Yeah. So we've talked a lot about the CFFC as a activist organization dealing with local governments and your standard distribution of weird, sculpture on government grounds, but it's also a community organization. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Right. We started as a state church separation watchdog, and it's grown into more of a humanist community, a secular community, and we included the name community in it, thinking that it might end up in that direction. And we found ourselves putting together more social events, educational events, and even some volunteer events. We've got volunteer programs coming up, including quarterly opportunities. We're looking at adopting a park or a waterway. And we recently did some work after the massacre in Orlando that we're proud of. I think we could have done some things differently, and I hope we can learn some things and share those with other folks. But, beyond the immediate shock of what happened, we needed to give what we could in our community. And we did that in a unique way, I think. We tried to find something, and through the help of Kelly Damaro, formerly the Secular Coalition, we decided to offer up an opportunity to do humanist memorial services or secular celebrations of life and raise funds for that. And unfortunately, no one has asked us for those services, but we're going to be able to donate $4,000 due to our advocacy and partially and thanks to you talking about it on the one of the podcasts. So that's just one thing that we're doing, and we're trying to envelop as much as we can of the free thought community into the many organizations that are there and work together and cross-pollinate, as you see locally.
So you've actually had prior engagement with the LGBTQ communities in Florida, specifically around marriage equality becoming basically legal. You are also a secular humanist celebrant. Can you tell us about some of the celebrations that went on in Florida after marriage equality becoming legal?
Right. So, yeah, it was about 2 years ago, I guess, this started to come up more and more here and as well as in Florida. And we talk about it as a state church separation issue, and it is a tremendously important one. And so as part of the process of dealing with the invocations, which we've talked about on the show before, I got my celebrant certificate from the Humanist Society so that I could do that. But it had paid off in the opportunity to provide weddings on the courthouse lawn when we got marriage equality, which was several months before the Supreme Court. So in, I think it was January of last year, I did three gay weddings. The first weddings I did were three gay weddings. The next one I did was a gay wedding. And I think I just did a straight wedding for the first time a month or two ago. So my wife is also, Jocelyn Williamson is also looking to become a humanist celebrant. And we're actually going to have a celebrant training in Florida with the Humanist Institute later this year.
Could you actually talk about the process of becoming a humanist celebrant a little bit?
Sure. So there are standards that you have to meet in knowledge about humanism. And most of those are met through an interview. You speak to the person at AHA. The Humanist Society is an adjunct organization of the AHA. And they certify as humanist celebrant. So you complete an application. You explain why you want to do this, what you're going to get out of it, what you can give to the community, how you are involved in your community, and you do an interview, and you're approved or disapproved, presumably by the board that approves those folks at the Humanist Society. And there are several hundred humanist celebrants right now, and I think that more and more we're going to hear about this, and there's going to be people that are doing it for a living. But it's certainly a very different experience than I've been used to as a community leader and activist, is being involved with a family. And certainly I've done one memorial service, and that is a very different experience than talking about a wedding. So there's a lot of benefits to getting together with other celebrants and talking about those experiences, and there are a lot of resources out there if people are interested in learning more about that.
That has been the concern for me, is I'll be honest with you, but humanist celebrant is something I've been very interested in throughout the time we've been talking about it on the show. But I've done weddings before, and I've helped with memorial services, but I feel a little bit useless for those, and I feel like maybe I wouldn't be the best choice for a memorial service. And I always felt like, well, if you're going to be a celebrant, you really should be able to do both.
I think that you could learn how to do it. I really do. I guess it depends on someone's ability to handle their own emotions and to work with other people. And if for some people, it may not be a good fit. But I think that it should be tried. I think that it really should be tried. And I think working together with other celebrants and participating in those ceremonies with them as a shadow or an apprentice might give you that knowledge as to whether or not you would be able to do that. But you don't have to do memorial services. You can only do weddings too.
Is there an inbuilt apprenticing situation, or is it mostly grassroots?
No, that would just be, I would say to you, if we were closer, I would say, hey, come and participate in the process with me and see what you think of it, and eventually feel like you could do it on your own. But there's not enough of us, unfortunately, to do a lot of that. So we're looking forward to this opportunity coming up in Florida to teach one another how to be celebrants with the help of the Humanist Institute.
Yeah, in terms of there's not enough of us around, I know that many people are tending towards the trend of having a close family friend perform their marriage or sanctify their or solemnize their marriage just through getting certified via Universal Life Church. And that varies from state to state. So Humanist celebrant certification actually provides something more than just sort of an internet certificate. And what kind of sort of training then, besides the knowledge of humanism, do you receive in terms of, or what kind of follow-up do you receive in terms of how to work with families, how to craft a wedding ceremony? Because there's no liturgy you follow like you would in a religious wedding.
Right. There are resources that are provided by the Humanist Institute and training classes that they have. Some are free, some are paid. And those are ways that you can learn. But also the Humanist Society itself provides a complete manual on selected readings, weddings, and memorial services that you can use. And there are Facebook groups and a lot of people out there that are willing to help. When I did my first weddings on the courthouse lawn last year, I reached out to Mary Lee Harrison, who is in, I think, is it New Mexico or Arizona? Mm-hmm. And she was extremely helpful. So there are, you know, we're willing to help one another in the humanist community. So there are people out there that are willing to help and provide that. As far as the training goes, the Humanist Institute has a lot of resources out there. Many of those, any of us can go online and just take without having to do anything other than sign up.
So there's always these questions that occur to me that I try to avoid asking because the essential of the question is, what's that like? But you mentioned being a humanist celebrant as marriage equality was happening in Florida before it actually happened nationally, and you're on the courthouse lawn performing ceremonies, probably for people who have been waiting to do this for some time, I should think. Can you describe that situation for us a little bit?
It chokes me up just a little bit to think about it, because the people that we met, some of them, one couple was young, but another couple was together for 13 years, and they thought they would never have the opportunity to do that. And it was heartbreaking to think about, but so rewarding to participate in that. And then a couple that I did the ceremony for a couple of months later, same scenario. They'd known each other for a dozen years and never thought it would happen, and it did. And it was. It's hard to describe how amazing it feels to help be involved in that and to not bring it into a religious setting, which is, I think, what a lot of people end up doing, because in many states, religious organizations are the only ones that can do this besides notaries and officers of the court.
I think it's really important to have a celebratory air about something that is a life event and something that's more than, as you said, going and being in a municipal building next to the people getting their dog license and the people renewing their boat license. For some people, that's fine and that's wonderful. And but for others that really would be missing that, I think that it serves a really neat niche. And we've got in our corner of the state Robert Ray, who telling about there's, you know, not enough of us around, he's overbooked with what he can handle.
Wow.
Because, you know, as you said, maybe some people might be tending to or might be looking at doing this for a living. But as of now, people who are humanist celebrants are primarily doing that as a side job.
Right. These are community leaders and other people that are already involved and are not necessarily looking for work, but work is landing in their lap. I'm getting requests and referring people to get memorial services and weddings. So there's definitely a need out there. It's just a matter of how much time you can fit it in. And if you've got the interest to do it, I hope you'll consider, doing that, Sam.
I've definitely been thinking about it for some time and actually talking with Robert about it quite a bit, in fact, especially ever since we started running his ads.
So there you go. You can apprentice under Robert.
Perhaps, yeah. So we've talked about on the less joyful side, we've been talking about the response to the shootings in Orlando and the just putting that out there where, you know, we're capable of doing these things if you need them. There hasn't been a response from anybody who does. Has there been a response to the from the wider community to your presence in Orlando during this time?
Absolutely. So we engaged a few years ago the Interfaith Council of Central Florida in conversation. The executive director is a Seventh-day Adventist, more liberal than most, and the president is a reverend, I think, a church. I can't remember the name of the congregation, but these are very progressive folks that are involved in interfaith, and we've been welcomed. And as we had the vigil 41 hours after the tragedy on the Monday following that, I was pulled behind the velvet ropes to participate as an equal alongside faith leaders as we did a secular candle lighting, and they rang the bells at the church across the street. And we basically, the Unitarian Universalist, Reverend Kathy Schmitz, a friend of ours, she provided a secular, you know, reflection and gave value to everyone that was there in a way that was kind of unexpected, because I knew there was going to be some sort of prayer. So we were involved in that because of our relationship that we established several years ago with the Interfaith Council. As well, the following night, my wife and I participated in an interfaith service in the First United Methodist Church in Orlando, where she spoke on behalf of the Florida Humanist Association and gave, you know, remarks regarding how this impacted our community and how we want to be, you know, one Orlando and united together. And I did the same thing on behalf of the Freethought community. And I made sure to say the word atheist when I did that.
Right.
And that quote made it into the paper the next day. And I'm glad I did, because I think we really need to soften the blow of that word when we talk about we're part of this community as well. And I think it's great to be welcomed in the way that we have. But there's been some pushback in other places as well. I don't know that you want to get into that, but regarding the response through the Orlando events, it's been pretty positive.
I think that what that speaks to is many atheist groups or free thought groups or humanist groups are sometimes tentative about or hesitant to affiliate with something called interfaith, because interfaith says you have a religion, you have a faith. And as atheists, we explicitly do not. As humanists, we have a community and a philosophy of life that is explicitly non-religious.
Yeah.
And I think that what this speaks to is the value that can come with interfaith affiliation and interfaith work.
Well, I do think it needs to be pointed out that, I mean, part and parcel, the reason I do Ask an Atheist, I mean, the reason why we wanted atheism in mass media back in 2010 with Mike and Jeremy and Casey and everyone is kind of exactly what you've just done in regards to this tragedy, which is you were present as not as in the community, not necessarily as somebody who's there to provide an alternative outlook or a platform for debate or a platform for a disagreement, but just that we are also a part of this community and we are grieving as well. And I think I don't think I'm going too far to say this may be the most significant thing I've heard in the atheism community in some time.
We took a lesson from what happened to Greg Epstein in Boston. And in fact, I've reached out to him twice, this time after this event, and then last year after the Chapel Hill shooting, which brought the atheist community and the Muslim community together. And
yeah.
I participated in a vigil at the University of Central Florida, and he was very helpful. And he inspired me by writing about his experiences in being left out and then how they've been included several times since then. I think up until, in fact, this event, they weren't included.
And you're talking about the Boston Marathon bombing?
Yes, thank you. Yes, so he was involved in that and was left out of a vigil. And I thought from that moment on that we need to be prepared in Orlando for this type of thing to happen. And
right.
Here we are. We're dealing with it. And I think we did pretty well. I would like to have been more included in some ways, but the Interfaith Council did a great job. And we're not a member of the Interfaith Council, and we've talked to them about how that might be challenging, but we're going to be involved even if we're not members.
Yeah, that's a thing that may get repaired somewhere down the line. I would not be surprised. I mean, I do say, I've often said that it seems like ecumenical means, well, you got to believe in something. But this is how community interaction will happen in a lot of cases. Is, I mean, let's be honest, we don't fit among plumbers, we don't fit among electricians, we are talking about personal beliefs. And when you're trying to group people who are talking about personal beliefs together, you tend to end up with a lot of religious people. So
absolutely. Standing shoulder to shoulder with those folks in disagreement on some things, but in agreement on 99% of things is what you've got to remember. There's,
yeah.
We have so much in common. We're some of us are community leaders. We're involved in many of the same ways.
All right. I got to admit, I'm kind of a rip the Band-Aid off kind of guy. You said there was some negative pushback. Was there anything... was it just what we've come to expect from certain parts of the community, or was there anything novel in it?
I think it was basically just state church establishment clause issues regarding promotion of a religious vigil and excluding non-believers in that from the perspective of the church, which is certainly their right. But when a city goes to promote an event, in fact, this was in Oviedo a few days afterwards, you know, we approached the city and said, hey, you've got an event here. Let us, you know, participate. And we didn't get much response, contacted the church, which was running the event, found that it was pretty much a church event. And resources were being used to promote the event at the city level. And it's a difficult time for us to push back on that right now. So we've decided to hold off because Oviedo's stacking up violations in other ways. And I think we'll have an opportunity to address those cumulatively later on. But we've got many state church issues that we're working on. And that's how we started as an organization. So that's our main focus. But we've widened into these other areas. And I'm glad we did.
It leaves us in a difficult position in situations like this where... we are being accused of being divisive when we're asking for mere participation.
Or opportunistic. Right.
When the suggestion, the basis of this argument is that we are emotionless. Like we're freaking Vulcans or something. And that has been some of the most painful stuff I think I've faced when trying to work at the community level with religious organizations is the idea that because I believe differently, I'm actually not human.
Right.
I'm somehow different.
Well, you can't possibly have your feelings hurt because, you know, you don't believe in anything, right, Sam? I mean, that's one of those things that atheists will occasionally get. And it led to, actually, Seattle atheists two T-shirt campaigns ago is, yeah. Yes, I'm an atheist. I'm also other things. And then also the Seattle atheists, we believe in you. Just because you don't believe in any gods doesn't mean that you don't have beliefs, that you don't have feelings, that you don't have emotions, that you don't celebrate and that you don't grieve, and that you don't yearn for inclusion and recognition within a community, especially at these really sensitive times. So I think that what you're doing in Florida really can provide a huge template for so many of us, and what Greg Gepstein has been doing in Boston can provide a template for so many of us, and it's something that is flexible to take to whatever your specific community needs at that time.
Yeah, it is something that is, I will be honest, is not really going on in any meaningful way in Washington presently, but I think as recent things going on in this state have shown, I think we do need it, and I think we should look to Florida as a model. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Did I get the right? Yeah, okay. I cannot believe I forgot that. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation because we've only really scratched the surface.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the third Thursday meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Secular humanism is a non-theistic view of the universe built on a foundation of reason, science, and democracy. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking, and we hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of freethinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. For information on how you can be a part of the humanist activities in the Puget Sound area, become a member of the Humanists of Washington today. Visit humanistsofwashington.org.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist with me, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. I still sound surprised when I say that, don't I? Anyway, I got some people I need to thank. I need to thank Jeff from Ventura, California, Mike from Kent, Washington, Movie Man from the Internet, and David from the Internet for making Peggy's Challenge. Peggy's Challenge is to the listeners of Ask an Atheist. This is Peggy from Kent Local. To help us keep the lights on, you can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. Click on the yellow button on the right-hand side, take you directly to our PayPal page. Every dollar you give us goes directly towards show production, not like potato chips or something. And we actually have a bit of an announcement on top of that, as far as fundraising goes, because
there's going to be a new button, isn't there?
Yeah, there's going to be a new button, and it's going to be a different kind of button, but it's going to be an oft-requested button. Is Ask an Atheist is finally joining the early 21st century and getting a Patreon. Becky, what is Patreon? I'm not even sure.
So Patreon is a way for our listeners to patronize us and our projects.
Aren't we not patrons in this model? Or no, they are our patrons.
Yes.
Yes.
They
okay.
can patronize us. So
got
patrons
okay.
go...
Because when you say patronize, that has a completely different meaning for me.
Well, you know? I mean, they can patronize us too. We're used to that. That's what the email is for. Yeah. If you want to scold us, if you want to tell us how we're wrong, you can patronize us that way. But if you would like to support us financially in our projects, our different production costs that we get, and some of the greater projects that we have our eyes on, then you can become our patron. You can subscribe monthly. You can give at your leisure. You can just have it taken out of your Patreon account. If you are already patronizing other creators, then it's easy to add us too.
Well, Becky, you've been the one sort of heading this one, but you've got some Do you have levels? I don't know how this works.
Yeah, so if we have a few little, you know, measly patrons, that's sort of meeting our first goal, which helps us just sustain our basic production levels.
Don't call it measly.
Okay. If we have some terribly appreciated contributions at a monthly rate, then you know, that helps us sustain our basic production levels. But we've got our eyes on some bigger goals. Our biggest goal would be a total overhaul of our studio, which would which would mean basically building an outbuilding studio that would be definitely more than just a ceiling wax and kite string and you know, pulley systems that we've got going on here.
Well, some of it would go to I guess you could say capital improvements on production facilities, which not only affects Ask an Atheist but other shows as well. But also, who advertise on this show, I should add. But also, I'll be honest with you, I like sitting in here, having conversations and talking about the news. But there's a lot of actual journal, I'm not going to call myself a journalist, but there's journalist-style things that I would love to do. I always loved going out and getting the story. I loved covering the CFI thing while they were here. I really liked doing the Camp Quest Northwest episodes. I've always felt I've done my best work on the road. And there are some really great show ideas. Well, not actually show ideas. Actually, the little mini series ideas that would probably take some time to do that may or may not be under the aegis of Ask an Atheist, but would definitely be something at cross interests with this show.
And it requires some traveling on your part.
I would need to go there and get the story.
We're stuck up here in this corner of the continent.
Yeah, that's something that's always been very difficult for me to do. I don't know if it's been clear, but I tend not to make it to conventions and things like that. And I'm not kidding when I said every dollar you give us goes directly towards show production. I don't spend it on going places.
No, nope, we haven't taken any money from here for our own personal payment.
Yeah, and so this is our opportunity to say, here are some cool things that I would like to do. And this is the thing about the Patreon model that I like, is that here are the cool things that I'm not doing that I would like to do. Here's a basic idea of how much money I'd need to get on a regular basis in order to solve that problem. Can you guys help me out or not? And that's a model I'm a little bit more comfortable with than just saying randomly thanking people. I don't know. I just not that I'm inconsiderate of that.
Kept our show afloat.
We've been doing this for more than 300 episodes, and this is my favorite thing in the world. So you know, obviously I'm not unappreciative. Anyway.
So look for that button, too.
Less blatant self-advertising and a little bit more advertising for something, you know, a little bit more community-oriented. So in the break, you were talking about a recent pledge ruling in Florida?
Yeah, so last summer in August, I think it was August or September, American Atheist has done what most of these organizations like Freedom From Religion Foundation and American Humanist Association's Epignani Legal Center do, is they tell Florida superintendents that they're violating a law relating to the Pledge of Allegiance in one way or another. And oh, by the way, you have a 1943 ruling, or not ruling, a Florida statute that says you must post a conspicuous notice for where in the school. It doesn't say much more than that, to let students know they have the right not to participate in the pledge. I've never seen one of these. I certainly won't say they don't exist in Florida, but I'm not aware of any of these signs being up, and I would imagine it's long been forgotten.
Yeah.
In fact, most of the people that I talk to in the movement that are actually paying attention to this don't know about it. So what happened was they said, you should do this in Santa Rosa County, right near Pensacola, where there seems like there's always state church news happening. The superintendent was told by the attorney there, yeah, go ahead and post it in every classroom. And once he did, the media, you know, got a hold of it, and the panhandle imploded because it's part of the Deep South and the Bible Belt and all those phrases. And then the lawmakers got together, the delegation there, and said, you know what, let's fix this. First they had to do the pledge, and then they got together and said, let's fix this. Let's not have the schools have to post that anymore. We'll just make them put it in the student handbook. We were opposed to this originally because we thought if they would be posting this, this would be great for the students to know about. And then we decided, you know what, if they're going to put it in the student handbook, they're actually letting folks know as right now they're not doing that.
Right.
So when that happened, we let the schools know. 67 superintendents got letters from the Central Florida Freethought Community and American Atheists last month. David Silverman was on a book tour in Florida, so we did some media there, and we got it talked about. So thousands more people learned that you don't have to say the Pledge of Allegiance, so that was a great opportunity for us. And this fall, we're going to tell every school district in 67 counties, all you have to do is send us your handbook and we'll know that you're in compliance with the law. And we've told them that's what's going to happen and that's what we're going to do when school starts back in August. And hopefully they'll all comply. And if they don't, then the news will hear about it.
Well, I think that we'll hear about it either way, whether there's a, you know, how many of the 67 are in compliance or not. So did the lawmakers actually get together and change the statute and say it doesn't have to be posted, it just has to be in the handbook?
Yes, and I did a lot of shorthand there. There was actually a bill that passed in the legislature this spring in Florida that made that change to the language.
Really fascinating. Now, you know, as a teacher,
I'm interested. What's interesting to me is that they didn't just take it out entirely, that they had to post it at all. That was an interesting move on their part.
Yeah, who pushed for it to stay in?
Well, I don't know that it even was considered to take out that notice. I think that might have seemed very blatant, and we probably would have reacted much more strongly than we did. We did a little bit of outreach, but we didn't travel to Tallahassee to the committee meetings. There was a few committee meetings. It passed unanimously in every committee in the House, and it was actually part of an education train bill in the Senate. So it didn't pass as a regular bill. It passed with all the education stuff that comes up in the legislature, which I'm sure you're familiar with here in Washington.
Oh yeah, we follow the state legislature in terms of its education bills, but it's fascinating actually for me as a teacher and as someone who's looking at something from a social perspective, which thing are students less likely to absolutely ignore, something in the handbook or something posted on the side of your classroom? Because man, we struggle against that all the time of getting students' attention, because when you have something posted everywhere, it just becomes white noise. It becomes, you know, the paint color of your wall. And if you have something in the handbook, well, they have to read it at the beginning of the year during registration and sign that they understand all the school rules, and then they never look at it again until they're brought up on a dress code violation.
On the other hand, having a big fight in the news about it where something that they thought may have been mandatory isn't probably did more than having it on the wall or in the handbook.
That was the point of our activism, was to get it in the news. Regardless of what happened here, we needed to make sure that more people found out about it, and we're going to do it again in August. So that's part of our strategy. It's one of our tenets, is to make sure that we engage the media proactively, reactively, and however we can.
It's actually, we talk about the pledge pretty frequently from a student perspective, but I've got something planned where we talk about it from a teacher perspective, because in many states, it is a state law that the flag salute be recited at the beginning of every school day. And what is the right and responsibility of a teacher who's employed in public school to lead it, to say it in completion, to delete, you know, under God, to educate about it? It's not quite a cut and dry issue like it is for students. And you know, we see pretty clearly from the Supreme Court ruling, the U.S. Supreme Court ruling that was brought by, the case was brought by a Jehovah's Witness family, I believe, that said, no student has to recite the pledge. But it's not clear cut about teachers. So we've got that in the works. And I think that's been requested here and there. So stay tuned for that one.
I should hope. In other news, you've got a conference coming up, Free Flow.
Free Flow has been an annual event for the last several years. My wife, Jocelyn, and I, she's a director with the Florida Humanist Association, and she and I both chair the conference. And we were involved in that in 2014 and then took over the complete responsibility in 2015 as leaders of that committee of the organization. And we've decided to put that on a biennial schedule, at least for now. The FHA is going through some changes, and I think the biggest change that we're going to see, at least externally, is the conference. It's going to be every 2 years, and I think that it's not fully fleshed out yet, but I'm glad to let everybody know that that's the case, and we'll be letting our subscribers know as well. So there won't be one in this fall, but there will be the next fall.
Oh, I have time to prepare then. So what brings you to the Pacific Northwest?
So my brother lives here. He lives in Seattle, and I haven't been out here before, so I was glad to do it. Thought I'd go to the beach, but I guess there's just cliffs in most cases. But no, it's pretty wonderful. The climate is like Florida in the winter. So it feels very, very brisk here.
Yeah.
And so he and his wife live in the Everett area, and we're just visiting, Jocelyn and I.
Very cool. Yeah, the beaches here tend to be either rocks or logs. not beaches as they are generally considered.
As someone who grew up on the Atlantic coast, I will say I think I might be switching my allegiance to the Pacific Ocean. Less smelly, crab is tastier than lobster, and I just
you
I
are
love,
a lying liar who lies.
Yes, typically I am. No, I do. I will go for Dungeness over lobster.
Okay.
This will be the end of our marriage. This will be the fight of the summer, Sam.
Like, literally, that's the only thing the Atlantic. the Atlantic Ocean has for me is
lobster,
a food I probably shouldn't be eating for one of about 15 different reasons.
So, you know, as Sam and I sometimes travel through the U.S., we tend to like to see what is apparent in terms of religious things. We like to take the pictures of the enormous cross in Effingham,
count the crosses.
Illinois. We saw, you know, the various, you know, anti-abortion, God loves all fetuses, billboards across the country. How has the Pacific Northwest seemed to you in terms of religiosity?
You know, I guess the fact that you don't know that a room is of comfortable temperature when you walk in is a good sign. So I've not noticed anything since I've been here. So I guess that's the sign I need to take, is that I haven't really noticed those kind of billboards. There's no, you know, there's not that type of rhetoric being discussed in the media there. But I was pleased to see a Flying Spaghetti Monster on a Prius as I was driving here, and I was excited about it. And then I realized where I was, and I figured that was probably one out of every 15 cars.
It's not that common.
Is that the uniform of the Pacific Northwest, or at least the greater Seattle area?
The FSM on the Prius, that may be, I mean, that may be approaching a stereotype.
That's a vehicular uniform, right?
If it's not already there. But it wasn't always common. You know, we were talking about it before, that when we saw an FSM sticker or anything like that on a car, we could usually look inside, you know, and within about 250 miles of here, anybody with that sort of thing, with that sort of regalia on their car, we'd look at, oh yeah, we know who that is. Yeah, we ran into them at the 4th of July picnic or something like that. Which I'd talk about, but at this point it was like 4 days ago, right?
Right.
But nowadays we're seeing it so often, and it's not very often that it's people I know. And maybe part of that is just I'm less likely to go to public events these days because public, but there's just, it's become much more common. And I think part of that is the shift in Washington state, because it has become much more secular as people begin to realize that there are other options available to them.
But the demographic shifts overall in our
nationwide
country.
Yeah.
Something like one out of every three young people under 35 do not affiliate with a particular religion at this point in our states. So
we're definitely seeing more and more people in the community in the Orlando area. And it a month doesn't go by that I don't meet someone that says, I didn't know that you existed here. I didn't know that there was other people like me. So it's rewarding to see those things happen and to provide opportunities to connect people.
Yeah. So much more we could talk about. We got about 3 minutes left, but there's a question I really have to ask. We've come up with a sort of a political shorthand on this show called the obtuse triangle. You're one of the corners in Florida. Insult or not, did I make a mistake there, or?
No, I don't think so. I think I take it for how it was intended, which is basically, you know, a third of the United States is bathed in religion and state church separation issues. And, you know, I mean, I guess we have the market cornered in Florida, so to speak, on that. But there's certainly no problem with the idea that there's the Deep South has a problem with religion, and Florida is no exception. And a lot of people say the farther north you go in Florida, the farther south you go.
Yeah.
I love that. A caller in our very first season had mentioned that one.
Yeah. I've begun to understand. Well, I began to understand it then. Now it just seems like a really great barometer for news stories. I really wanted to make the northern point Wisconsin, personally, because you get occasional weird stories out of Wisconsin, and maybe that's just because I'm from Illinois and I'm sort of used to hearing that sort of thing.
I think
that's just yet another rivalry that I have a side in.
That would have to morph into the strange polygon.
But Kansas really was it Kansas or Oklahoma?
I think Oklahoma, Arizona, and Florida. You connect all those dots and you get none other than an obtuse triangle.
You don't have it on the wall. We got to get you a map on the wall here.
Geez, in the next incarnation of this place, it will definitely have the map. The acoustic properties of a map. Can you get a map printed on burlap?
I don't know.
You think? I don't know.
That's... Rock wool maps.
Yeah, that's fairly transparent.
Contribute to our Patreon.
So if people want to find out about Free Flow, the Central Florida Free Thought community, all this great stuff you're working on, where would I send them?
Well, it used to be hard to find stuff, but now there's the Google. So
yeah,
you can find Central Florida Free Thought community pretty easily online. And we're at CFL Free Thought on Facebook and Twitter. The Florida Humanist Association is the host organization for Free Flow, but you can find it under Florida Humanist Association or Free Flow, F-R-E-E-F-L-O, and that's for Free Thought Florida.
Fantastic. So
it's been really lovely having you in the studio finally. I know we've been in touch with you, and it's always been great having you inform us, but it's great having you from one corner of the country to this corner of the country.
Yeah, it must have been an interesting flight.
Couple of flights.
Couple of flights. Yeah. Ah. I tend to be a little allergic to...
to flying.
To flying, especially these days, because reasons. And that's all the time we've got for today. I'd like to thank Becky.
Thanks, Sam.
David Williamson, thank you so much for being in the studio and for all the news you've given us over the years.
It's a pleasure to be here and always a pleasure to be part of the show and contribute, so thank you.
You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv and give us a voicemail at 844-753-7842. There's probably other ways that I'm skipping. Man, I had a great time at the E Pluribus Unum stuff. Thanks, Robert Ray. Actually, thanks, Tarkus Claypool. See you all next week.